This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, I've got a wonderful program today. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to Linda Plunkett, whose story is really quite amazing and inspiring. And she's here in the studio waiting. But first, we have my legal eagle here, and I am so happy because we have some interesting legal stories to talk about today. Hi, Bill Larson from Larson & Larson. They are the very, very best. Not only do they handle my intellectual property, they also handle my patents. And if you have a patent and if you have an idea and you want to go on Shark Tank, everybody's watching Shark Tank this week because it's Shark Week or whatever, you need Bill first. Right, Bill?
That's right.
Yes, don't go around on Shark Tank without having seen Bill Larson first, right?
Get a patent first.
Get your patent because you will be sorry. So how are you doing, Bill?
I'm fine.
Okay, well, we have a few things here to talk about. I had a lot of response to our last time you were here when you found out that, yes, you can copyright a word. Today we're going to talk about a very interesting story. It's about a lawsuit from an author, Emma Klein, who did a book deal few years ago, a three-book deal. It looks like a seven-figure three-book deal. Wow. And the book that she wrote is called The Girls, and she was sued. So tell us about that. What happened, Bill?
Really interesting case, and I think we could write a novel about this novel and the lawsuit that's going on. And so in this case, Ms. Klein had a boyfriend way back when, and he's alleging that during that time she plagiarized ideas and characters and other things that went into her book from him. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it creates a interesting issue of plagiarism or potentially co-authorism. Okay, is he a co-author? And in absence of any kind of written agreement saying that she owns everything, he has an argument that maybe he is a co-author of this book. Now, she does admit that she was spying on him through his computer.
Ooh, nasty, nasty.
But not for the purposes of the book, just because apparently there was some infidelity.
She was a little suspicious of
a little suspicious of the boyfriend. So this raises an interesting question for our authors out there who are with friends or lovers or folks who are not married, and how do you protect yourself from someone coming later and saying, hey, that was my idea, I should be a co-author, I'm entitled to some of the proceeds, okay? And as we've said before, that's easily corrected with a very small document called a copyright assignment. The tough part is how do you get your lover to sign that?
Yeah, especially if you know they're going to get a seven-figure deal.
And so these kind of documents, and it's just a one-page document, very easy to draft. I tell all of my clients to have anybody that you're working with sign these, okay? Anybody, if they're contributing any kind of graphics or words or thoughts, even if you're sitting down with somebody and saying, hey, I've got this idea, what do you think? All right? Because the minute that other person contributes to you, there's a potential claim for co-author. All right, so we can correct that with what we call a copyright assignment. It's a one-page document. It's very easy to draft. Anybody that you talk to about your work, have them sign it. Then that forecloses them from ever coming back later and saying that they're entitled to any proceeds from your work.
Okay.
All right.
That reminds me of a little story of a lawyer, of a lawyer who took an author's idea and ran with it. So do you have to have your lawyer sign it, too?
You don't have to have your lawyer sign it because the laws provide that lawyers can't do that. So that would be a fraud and a theft. And
yeah,
you'd have a statutory right.
It was in Missouri, I think. And the lawyer liked the book so much, he decided to run with it to Hollywood.
And that's wrong and that's bad.
Yeah.
But that's a theft and a fraud.
Yeah.
So there's laws that deal with that. But in absence of a law that gives you a remedy, you have to use a contract, right? You get somebody to sign. Now, it's different if you're married, okay? If you're married, it's 50-50, right? So if I'm married, and I am, and I come up with this great book, and I start selling it and getting all kinds of proceeds, and we get divorced, my wife is entitled to 50% of that.
So
okay? You can't do anything about that unless you contract out of it otherwise. The wife or the husband can contract out of that and say, no, I don't want the proceeds.
You can contract
out of anything if you want to, right? You can waive your rights. You can give your rights away. But I tell all of my clients to be careful when you're inventing something that's going to be a patent, coming up with a product that might be trademarked or a book or something that might be copyrighted, that you have contracts in place with anybody that you speak to saying that, I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page that, you know, if I hit this over the fence and this goes big, you don't have any part of it, and you need to sign this document right here that says so.
Okay. I can just envision. Sounds easy. Oh, by the way, dear, I've just been working on this book, and I think it's going to be a bestseller. Would you sign this release before I give you your orange juice and... Yeah, I'm sure you really don't want it. Yeah.
So what's really interesting about these cases, and I've handled cases between former lovers, husbands and wives, former partners, family members. These cases are more family law and federal court than they are real intellectual property cases. These are more about settling scores and trying to get back at people personally. We don't accept these kind of cases anymore in my firm. If you're a former partner or you were married or you were lovers, we don't take the cases because they never turn out well, okay? Because that's not what the courts are designed to do, okay? The courts are not designed to make you feel better, right? The courts are designed to give you money. That's all a court can do. They can give you money. And money alone doesn't settle these kind of feelings. The court can't make you say you're sorry, okay? And so these cases never turn out well. No one's ever happy. And for that reason, just as a part of our business model, we don't accept these types of cases.
Now, in this case, the boyfriend, he had not actually written anything himself. He had not...
He's alleged to be also an inspirer writer, and that he had put down some notes or some ideas of some kind. It's not clear exactly what it is. The details aren't out yet, exactly what is alleged to be plagiarized. But she did admit peeking into his computer, and she does admit he was an author, okay? But she doesn't admit that he had anything that she put in her book, The Girls.
So the only way that he could win is if he actually had...
He's gonna have to show that he came up with the idea or the concept or the character or the scene or one of those things that are important to the book, and that he can show that he had it first and that she took it from him. If he can show that, then he's entitled to some of the proceeds as a co-author.
Okay, and it is important. It's very, I've been involved in a few lawsuits in my life, and it's funny. You do have to keep things. And I am still keeping things. I don't know why I keep things, because I was involved in a lawsuit where it turned out to be relevant that the person who was writing a document, the font that supposedly was written 10 years previously, mm-hmm. had not existed. It was not invented until 10 years. It was an absolute forgery. But that's why it's important to have the originals, right?
Right. So oftentimes in both patents and copywriting, it's who did it first, who invented it first, who filed first. And if you can show that you had those ideas or concepts and that they were related to that person, or they saw them and took them, then you have a legal remedy, and that is to some of the proceeds.
Well, I mean, this book, The Girls... It tells the story of a 14-year-old girl who gets involved in a dark cult mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Apparently, a very, very good book.
Yeah. She won lots of prizes.
Yes.
And
she's accomplished educational.
Very.
She certainly has the credentials to
get a seven-figure mm-hmm. deal is not easy. And so, it's great. Mm-hmm. But...
These cases are very expensive, okay? Federal
That's
court
what
in San Francisco with these big fancy copyright lawyers, you're talking, tens of thousands and thousands a month in litigation fees. Typically, more than likely, the boyfriend probably has lawyers on a contingent basis, because they realize that sooner or later she's going to pay some money to make it go away. And that's how these cases are resolved.
Particularly since she had a movie deal for the book.
Right. So there's a lot of money at stake.
When you have a movie deal on a book like that, yeah,
there's
definitely.
Blood in the water, the sharks are coming around.
Oh, they are. So
that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a very good one. So what else?
All right. This is going to be a little bit off topic, but I think it's something that's important to all of our listeners. And it's part of these new data privacy laws that are coming around. They're being instituted in Europe. California is the first state to institute these new data privacy laws. And so what these laws say and what they're going to mean to our listeners is that if you have an internet site and you collect data on your customers, or you sell or transact, let me say you sell your book or you sell other products on your internet site, you're going to have new statutory obligations to maintain the privacy of those individuals, their name, their address, their credit card information, and all of that. And you're going to have a protocol installed so that in the case of a breach or a hack and this information is stolen, that you're going to do something about it. These laws will also provide a private cause of action for individuals who, after requesting to opt out, in other words, you're going to have something on your website that gives the person who's entering your website information concerning what you're doing with their information. For example, Google Analytics, okay? When somebody comes into a website, you can watch how they move around the website, how long they stay, where they go, and you can backtrack them and find out who they are and you know how they spend their money and where they travel. All of us are being tracked and being data mined 24 hours a day, okay? So these new data privacy laws are going to require people who have websites or transact any business on the internet to have the ability for their customers to opt out so that you can't use their information. All right, and they're going to have new protocols to protect the privacy, the information, the privacy of the information. And if there's a breach and that person's information is compromised, there can be legal remedies, statutory legal remedies, private lawsuits. So it's a big deal for companies and individuals transacting over the internet.
Okay, this is something new.
This is something very, very new. Yeah,
it's in America.
It started in the EU, and the EU now has instituted it. And so a lot of my clients here in the United States who transact business in the EU and have EU clients are now required to set up very expensive new protocols for data collection, data privacy, very, very expensive to institute these protocols. California is the first state in the United States to institute a data privacy law. Still about 18 months until the law will come into effect, but these laws are going to spread around the United States. They are going to be important to our listeners, and so you need to get ready right now that if you're going to transact business on the internet, need to start worrying about data collection, data use, analytics, privacy, and cybersecurity.
Okay, well, great. That's just that's great news for me. One more thing for me to think about because I just started this week a shop, you know,
where you can purchase on your
where you can purchase T-shirts like I have been a guest on right. Joy on Paper, or a mug I have been a guest on Joy on Paper, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And when that person buys something from you, you typically collect their data. You need to know who they are, where they live. What's
well,
their
do
credit
I have an arm's length thing because I'm using a company that. Produces it? Am I responsible?
No, you're still responsible. So if you are collecting any kind of data and people are coming to your website and they're transacting business, then you have an obligation that and these laws are going to be coming over the years. So it's like kind of get ready for it now because they're coming. When you build out your websites, you want to make sure that you have sufficient cyber security protocols so that you can't be hacked, all right, to keep the bad guys out, which is very hard because the hackers are very good at getting in.
Okay? Well, if they can get into the Pentagon and...
And the CIA and everybody else, they can get into us, right?
Yeah, I mean,
And so you have to protect the information of your customers. And God forbid they get in and they steal that information and they sell it because that's very valuable, right? The hackers sell this information to frauds who use your identity, either as a fraudulent identity or your credit card number to purchase products. If you are hacked and that information is taken, then you could suffer a lawsuit by the folks who lost their privacy, lost their information to the hackers, and that could be very expensive.
Now, would that be only the financial information? What about most authors I know have a website where they ask people to sign up for their newsletter, and that's enough?
That's it right there. So let's talk about some of the data. Personal information, obviously. For a long time, health information has been protected under what we call HIPAA laws, yeah. right? You have to, if you're a doctor, right, you have to be very careful about the prognosis, the diagnosis, all of that stuff, the information concerning your patient. And so those same kind of laws are going to come to now, you know, out of the healthcare industry and into just transactions of commodities, where you're going to have to be very careful about the privacy of your customer, their name, their address, social security numbers.
So, but if you just have a newsletter and you're getting their email address, do you think that would be a problem?
The California law describes personal information, that information which you have to protect, as information that identifies, relates to, describes, is capable of being associated with, or could reasonably be linked directly or indirectly with a particular consumer or household. That's pretty much everything.
That's everything.
Okay? You should consider that to be everything. All right. So if you're running a website and people are going to your website and they're purchasing things from your website, or you have a website where you just collect data for the purpose of analytics, you have a new heightened obligation of security for that information.
So you could be sued.
You could be sued under a statute. And right now, California.
Heaven knows people will. People look for every reason to sue.
The lawyers are looking right now,
exactly,
on how they're going to build out these lawsuits.
So probably.
It's the bigger companies that have the most to worry. For instance, you know, we've seen a lot of the large chains and stores been hacked and all that data stolen. And
But they have insurance. A little guy doesn't have insurance.
They do. But it still costs them a lot of money because these kind of breaches were just
horrific.
But the problem they had is that they didn't have protocols in effect to deal with the hack once it happened. Okay, and what they did is a lot of them tried to hide it.
Yeah.
The new law says that if you do get hacked, there has to be protocols in place right away that you can identify those individuals and tell them their information's been stolen very quickly.
Yeah, but if you're a small business or you have a shop or like that, how do you even know if you've been hacked? This is going to be...
And so part of the law says that you have to have a person or an outside vendor, either an employer or a vendor, who is going to monitor your website to determine whether or not you've been hacked. Okay, it's called a compliance officer. These rules and regulations are going to be very expensive for business.
Oh, boy.
Hundreds of thousands.
And
for the bigger companies who transact thousands and thousands of sales a day, right?
Yeah.
This is a lot of information to protect.
Huh. Okay. As if writers didn't have enough things to think about that they have to now start worrying about the information.
Yeah,
Different writers, I have seen writers who collect more than just your email. Sometimes they'll ask, what's your favorite book
for sales,
or whatever.
Right? You need to know who your customers are, right? You can't make sales if you don't know who your customers are. Woo. So in order to know who your customers are, you need to collect their data. You know, do they like steak or do they like fish? You know, do they like red cars or white cars? All that's important to the people that sell commodities.
And then you've got all these crazy people out there.
And those analytics are important, so they are collected, and we do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. What the law says is you gotta protect this stuff. Okay, you gotta protect it from the hackers because they're out there and they're trying to steal it.
Okay, another thing. Because as I mentioned to you before, one of the big problems that. And I know quite a few authors who were using on their blogs, they were using photos they found on the web that they thought were free.
Yep.
And they're not free.
Mm-hmm. There's a cost.
There's a cost. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, one author had 400 photos on her blog.
I deal with a lot of cases
that. And she had to go through and take off every single one of them.
And often pay money.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It was quite a mess.
Right.
So the ones that say that they're free and they say we're royalty free, it's okay?
Well, what they do is they say that. Let's say they'll say freemusic.com is one of them. And if you go on there and you just want to download some music and just use it in a non-commercial setting, that's okay. But they don't make that clear on the website. So if a commercial endeavor comes on there and they download some of that music and put it on their website and that website transacts business of any kind, then that's a commercial use and you have to pay. And usually you don't find that out till later when they call you up and say, hey, you took that song and you got to pay. And so So be careful about what you're downloading, either music or text or graphics on the internet. Make sure that what you're getting is in fact free. There is a lot of free stuff out there, okay? Some stuff you don't have to pay for. But in other cases, you do. And so you need to be careful about what you're downloading before you download it, because it may be somebody else's property.
And definitely I want to warn everyone out there again, because as a personal story, if you have written a children's book and you and you have a friend who wants to do illustrations for you,
get them to sign a
forget
contract.
Forget it. No, I mean, yes, exactly.
Get them to sign a contract. Everything's cured with a contract.
See, Bill Larson, because that's what happened to me. And I was just looking at my beautiful children's book, which is there, and I can't do anything with it because this woman went crazy on me. She was a friend, and she went absolutely bonkers. And she says, yeah, I got this idea that, you know, she was going to get millions, and they're just drawings. I said, no, they're not.
What most people don't know is that if you pay somebody to do drawings, that doesn't mean you own the copyright.
Absent
a copyright assignment, it means that you can, you may be able to use them in some format, but maybe not commercially.
Even though I told her exactly what the character looks like. I mean, I mean, I had a rough sketch myself, which I didn't save either. I didn't think about it. I just, you know, we're having coffee. I said, I want him to be this tall. I want him to be this wide. I want him to have this color. These, and of course, she could draw it, so she drew it.
And then the copyright automatically went to her.
Exactly.
And then the only way you could get it is by a contract. You'd have to sign what's called an assignment.
Yes, and she wants a fortune. I can't. That's crazy. Okay, so again, thank you so much, Bill. You always have great
ideas. It's raining
ideas
here today, so we have to have some kind of tough love
advice today. Exactly, tough love. And do make sure, people, if you are writing a book, please, also, if you're writing a book, don't call it the girl anything. I don't want one more girl book. Maybe this is the one who started it. I have like 10 girl books. Girl this, girl that, girl. Finally, it's going to be, I'm going to write a book about the radio show host who killed somebody who gave her another girl book.
Or use women.
Yes, use women, finally. I don't care. Gals. I don't care. Not another girl book. I have too many. But anyway, Bill, thank you so much. And how can people get a hold of you?
LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Larson Patent Law. And Bill does just great work. All of his people are so good. Your patent people are super. They find things and they know things, and that's important. When it comes to patents, you have to have everything right.
And information
so while you're sitting there, you know, coming up with ideas and watching Shark Tank, think of Bill Larson and
get a patent.
That's it, and protect yourself. Okay,
thank you
so much for coming in today, Bill. It's just great, and I think you've given us some important things to think about. And some things that scare us a little.
Be careful out there.
Be careful. That's why we need lawyers.
That's
so
right.
Okay,
God
thanks so much. Okay.
Good day.
Bye bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my next guest. I am so really thrilled to have her in the studio with me today. Her name is Linda S. Plunkett. She's a PhD, and she's written a book called Supernatural Rescue: From Broken to Beautiful. And she is beautiful, and I know that because it was an amazing story about how I discovered her. You know, I find authors in a lot of ways. Of course, most of my authors come from the big publishing houses in New York City, and they send me all these wonderful books. But I also like to go around and go to writers' events, and I meet local authors and a lot of indie authors. And of course, I get quite a few people now from Facebook, and I appreciate that. And when you are on Facebook, go to my Facebook page. It's Radio Joy on Paper, and you know, messenger me, and I've now gotten quite a few authors that way, and I enjoy hearing from you. But this is the first time I got an author while in the cosmetic section at Walgreens. So I am so happy to have you here, Linda.
Thank you so much.
Wasn't that funny?
That was funny. And I was trying to figure out, why is this lady standing behind me while I'm playing my video?
Well, it was funny. There I heard, I was in one aisle, and I heard Linda tell the girl behind the cosmetic counter, I wrote a book, and that's all I need to hear. So I peek around, and there she is. She's showing a video to the young woman there at the cosmetic counter, and I had to sneak up and have a peek at it. And it was the most amazing video of Linda dancing, like dancing to the stars. I mean, beautiful, all
Thank
choreographed and looking so,
so
gorgeous, like a movie star.
Thank you.
It was beautiful. And I said, whoa, I have to find out more about this person. So there we were. We were both in the cosmetic section, and we were not dressed up. we were like just running. But it was so funny to meet you that way.
That was amazing.
And that's what I said. It was meant to be.
It was.
It was, because otherwise I might never have heard of you.
Well, things happen for a reason. Exactly. I really believe that.
Exactly. And so you have to tell us about your amazing story. And when the name of the book is Supernatural Rescue, and that's certainly you just have to start at the beginning and tell us what happened to you. Okay.
Well, at the end of 2012, I had a very surreal experience, because at that point I was a really healthy 59-year-old woman. I played golf, I ran a counseling practice, I traveled, I did all the normal things a 59-year-old would do, but I had no health problems. I had no high blood pressure. I had no high cholesterol. I really felt like I was in perfect health. And then one day I came home from lunch, and I had lunch with a friend and my son, and they were looking at my husband saying, there's something wrong with Mom. And I'm looking at them, what do you mean there's something wrong? There's something wrong. She's not like herself. There's just something happening with her that isn't correct. So anyway, I went to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, it's probably nothing, but we should do a scan. And so after the brain scan, I get a phone call, and I'm shocked to hear on the other side of the line a voice telling me, I'm sorry to tell you this, but you have a brain tumor, and it's the size of a tennis ball in your frontal lobe. And so I went back, you know, for further testing, for further discussion with a surgeon, met with several surgeons, and they said, you cannot hold off on this surgery. I was having mental lapses, and that's what was so different about me. I wasn't myself. I was behaving in a different way. I was speaking in a different way. And they called these a type of a seizure. And although it wasn't cancerous, thank God, a seizure can just as well kill you. So I had to have surgery like in the very near future. So this was probably, I would say, November. And by the middle of December, I was in the operating room.
For a major surgery?
A major surgery where they cut my head from ear to ear because of the size of the tumor. The surgery was supposed to be 3 to 4 hours and turned out to be nearly 8 because there were complications.
Wow, this is a big change in your life.
Well, from going from being healthy, I have no problems, to I have a major brain surgery, and then waking up and feeling like a vegetable. And people say, what does it feel to be like a vegetable? Well, first of all, it was very strange because I couldn't think well, I couldn't speak well, and I felt like God had left me, although we know in reality he had not. But the feeling was I was totally empty and alone, and I didn't know what to do.
And you went from that to how many years later, and you're doing A Dancing to the Stars.
It's amazing. It's a miracle. It truly is a miracle. And I wrote the book. I wasn't really completely well when I wrote the book, but I feel with the strength of God, I was able to get the book published, and that was a small miracle. But I would say about a year ago, I had an experience where I got some stem cells, and it literally cured my fibromyalgia. I still was having sleep problems. And when you have fibromyalgia, it can be to a various degree, but in my situation, I couldn't sleep, and the sleep caused me more memory problems. I couldn't focus well, and so my mind was still affected, and, you know, miraculously, I wrote the book, but about a year ago, I felt totally, finally healed from the fibromyalgia, and so now I can say I'm 100%, and I guess the doors just opened through my dance instructor and really a professional choreographer for me to do this dance performance, which I never dreamed would happen in my lifetime.
Well, I think it is so amazing. And when I saw the video, I said, well, when you see it, you can't believe that there was ever anything wrong with her, and certainly not a brain tumor, and because there was quite a recovery process.
It was. It was a long recovery process. In the beginning, I couldn't walk. I had trouble forming my words. I'd say it took me about 3 months to learn how to walk. But my brain was really messed up, and I went to a major medical institution and said, can't you do some tests? Do some tests. Test me. Help me. Find a way to help me. And after the test, they said, there's nothing we can do for you. And I was at a point, I can't live like this. I have to find a way to get better. And I, with the help of God, I found ways to get better. And I'm hoping my next book will also, some of those ideas will be passed on. People have asked me to write the book. Other people have said, we need the book. We feel as we're getting older, we've had changes in our brain, and we need to know how to make our brain sharper. So my next book will include some of those ideas.
Wow. Now, so you started recovering from your surgery, and you were taking notes, even though at that point you were writing, but you really could your mind was working enough that you were writing words.
I was trying to, and this was a suggestion from my home healthcare nurse. I came home from the hospital, and I was such a mess. And I put my hands to my face and cried, and I said, I don't know how to do this. And he recommended starting to write a journal. Well, in the beginning, my brain was so poor, I could not even read what I wrote. But as time went on, the notes began to make sense and eventually form the beginnings to the book.
Wow. And then it was a process over...
Exactly. And people say, oh, you can't get a publisher. Well, that's not necessarily true. With God, all things are possible. I went to a book writers conference, and honestly, I had only written a few chapters to the book, and so I submitted a book proposal, and the publisher started pursuing me, and he said, I think you really have something that needs to be presented and shared. But I had only written a few chapters when the book was basically accepted by the publisher. So then I had to get busy. I had to finish the book. There was some pressure there.
Exactly. Once you're in that position. But it's a nice position to be in. And you need that sometimes, that encouragement to really...
That's very true. To light a fire to get going.
Exactly. Exactly. And as I mentioned to you, you know, it's a very easy to read book. I think it's very compelling. You've had it edited professionally, which is important, because I always tell all new writers, you know, even the most seasoned. I was just talking to Margaret George, and you know, she went through like a 6-month editing process. So even the most famous and the greatest writers go through an editing process with professional editors, and it really makes a difference. And as I was reading your book, I realized, I said, she's had some good editing here. And that's important.
And I did, and I actually had two editors, because I hired an editor before it went to the publisher. But then the publisher also, they went through an edit. So that was very interesting. Got a lot of varying feedback.
but it's a process.
Yes, definitely.
It's a process. And so tell us, because I was so intrigued. Now, where can people see the video that I saw? They can see it on your Facebook page?
Well, they can go to my Facebook page, Linda Plunkett. And I'm in the process of trying to get it on my book page, but I haven't quite gotten it there. I'm a little bit technically challenged, which is nothing new.
Okay.
But I'm hoping to overcome that. It will soon be on Supernatural Rescue page. However, right now, if you go to Linda Plunkett, very close to the top of my postings, you should see that video.
Okay, and so you have a website called Facebook Supernatural?
Yeah, it's a Facebook page, and I'm in the process of working on a website right now.
Okay, Supernatural Rescue.
Yes.
And, you know, I think anyone who will go to that and just look at that video, and you'll say, wow, if she could do that in 5 years, go from major brain surgery, and she looks like she's on Dancing to the Stars. That was fun, huh?
It was amazing. It was amazing. And it's one of those things. I had a new dance instructor, and he said he wanted to do this after reading the book. And I thought, oh, that's so nice. But, you know, a lot of times people say nice things. It doesn't really happen. Well, before I know it, I'm speaking with a professional choreographer. And the next thing I know, I have backup dancers. I'm thinking, wow, this is really happening. And it was so surreal, because I had like 5-6 people behind me, backing me up, including my instructor. And yet I was the only non-professional, so it was a little bit intimidating, but we had a lot of practice, and people tell me it looks well, so I'm grateful.
It looks great. It looks great.
Thank you.
And you look beautiful. And I thought, well, this is something like that is inspirational, because people go through so many things. You have illnesses, you have pains, you have all sorts of things, but then to look forward to doing something, and to look forward to writing a book, and to look forward to doing something that you were dreaming about.
This is very true. I went through years of feeling so bad, and, you know, people probably shouldn't feel this way, but I did feel like, in a way, I was being punished. What did I do wrong? I've always been healthy, and why this? And many of those whys can never be answered, but I'm happy to say things did work out for the good, and good things have come out of that, and out of the pain. God has enabled me to share with other people the joy of living, and how, with faith and with hope, sometimes things can change in your situation.
Well, now, you know, one of the things that I noticed, of course, the dedication is to your father.
Yes.
So tell us about your father.
Well, my father was basically very poor. He grew up in West Virginia. He was in World War II for 5 years, and he basically hitchhiked to Ohio to start a business. And his business became larger and larger. My parents grew business together till, I mean, it was amazing. He eventually had 5 grocery stores. They built a golf course. And my mother had a cafeteria. But both of them were just very hardworking. They were poor people initially. But with hard work and dedication and really believing the customer is always right and treating people the right way, they were very successful in life. And my father, with the help of my niece, wrote a book. And maybe that was sort of an inspiration for me. When he was very, very old and I was still very, very sick, I went to spend time with him in Ohio. And that time was very important.
That's the Amish?
Yes. My parents live in a small town called Worcester, Ohio, which is near the Amish country.
Amish, yeah.
Yes. And so that's where I grew up, in a small town. And, of course, it's very different from living in Florida. But, yeah, I'm glad I had those roots. My parents were very hardworking people. They had a very strong work ethic. They believed in the golden rule, really treating people the way you want to be treated. And so I was raised with that, and I'm very grateful for that background.
Well, what is the name of your father's book? You brought it with you, and I always like to promote books. And now, your father was 100 years old.
And he died a couple years ago, but his book is called My Experiences in War and Business, One Man's Story of Success.
Well, I think that's great. Otis Earl Hawkins. And, with a foreword by Dan Quayle.
Okay. Yes.
Wow. Now I have to read this one. This is my thing. Whenever I come across somebody who has written a book, and I love books from people from the World War II generation.
Yes, and it's very true. It's a true rags to riches story. And, I mean, my parents weren't super rich like a lot of people, but coming from poverty and growing up in a home where my father had to quit high school, basically, to support the family, he came a long way through hard work and dedication and treating people the way he wanted to be.
Well, really, so many of the World War II generation, that's what they did.
Exactly.
Or they got eighth grade educations, but they went, they fought the war.
Right.
They did so much for us, and then they came home from the war, and they just worked hard.
He did. He was a very hard worker. And I worked in the business from the time that I was 9 years of age. And when I talk about laughing, about dance, I laugh about it because I wasn't one of those little girls that could have dance lessons. Because when I was 9 years old, I was working in the business. And I worked throughout my childhood through my teen years. But now I get to dance. maybe I missed when I was a little girl. I'm dancing now. And I'm loving every minute of it.
Well, I think that, that's one of the wonderful things. Life can be such a joy if you look for it.
And yes,
I was so taken with you when I saw you in the store. There you are in the store talking to the woman behind the cosmetic counter. Most people don't even talk to anybody in the store. They don't pull out their phones and start showing this video. And I could see she was delighted that you were doing that.
Well, I want to share with people because I did go through such a dark, dark time, but I want to give other people hope. And, being a counselor for 15, 20 years, I gave people hope. But now I want to do it in a different way. I want to do it through speaking and writing and sharing with people how your life can turn around, even if you're going through something difficult. And honestly, when you talk to people, most people are going through something difficult. It could be spiritual, it could be mental, it could be physical, or they have someone close to them. And we all need hope. I really believe that.
And you give it, it's something you can share. If you, it's like the name of this program is Joy on Paper, because it is such a joy to write. You feel, you have such a feeling of pride when you see your words on paper. And then to know that somebody is going to read them, it is just absolutely amazing. And you never know. In your case, you've written a very inspirational book, and you never know when it will somebody will pick it up just at the right time in their life.
And that's so true. And I've had a couple people say, Linda, I read it, I sat down and I read it from cover to cover, or I read it three times. And, that makes everything that I went through, all the difficult years, worthwhile, knowing it's helping someone. It's encouraging someone, because that was the purpose of the book.
And she did another thing that I tell all authors. You have to promote yourself, and you have to get out there and talk to people. And so many authors have a very difficult time with that, because they love to write, but they're alone. They're in their little world writing. As an author, even the ones who are, published by the big publishing houses, they have to get out there and promote themselves. And so wherever you are, you know, you might be in Walgreens and you talk to people. You might be in Panera's or wherever you are. You should be talking to people because you never know who is going to hear you and who is going to who you will be able to help by telling them about your book. And I think that's fantastic.
That's so true. And I appreciate that encouragement because I am outgoing. But every now and then, you know, you really question how much and who and who would be interested. But I look for a little bit of interest. And if there's a little interest, then I go from there.
Yeah, exactly. You, and because you're doing them a service, too, by bringing to them something that could change their lives.
I hope so. I really do.
Even if it's not your particular book, the idea that you were able to write a book with everything you went through, a lot of people will say, well, she went through that and she wrote a book. I can do that.
That's true. And there's so much negativity out there in the book world. Oh, you can't do this. You can't do a book. You can't get it published. You know, all the reasons why you shouldn't, when I'm here to say you can and it's possible.
And as I have been, you know, working on some historical works, and it is one of the joys for me is to find all of the books that people wrote in the olden days, books that you think, well, they weren't famous, they never sold a million books in those days, but boy, oh boy, it's so wonderful to have those books and to be able to draw upon them and the wisdom of the time, because you know, when somebody writes a book and they put down the things that they've learned, the things that they've experienced, it's so important to preserve them.
No, I agree. And I was a counselor for between 15 and 20 years. I have so many materials that now I'm really excited about sharing more of those in my next book, because I feel like, okay, I've closed my practice, but there's still people that need that. There's people that need the encouragement. They're going, you know, we're a body, a soul, and a spirit. And, you know, that soul is the mind, the will, and the emotions. In that area, we need the encouragement. We need the help. We need help along the way. And we don't need to feel we're alone. We need to feel that there's sources to get information that can help us.
Exactly. And I think that You've done a terrific job with your book, which is Supernatural Rescue. And now I'm holding this book in my hand, My Experiences in War and Business, One Man's Story of Success in America, Otis Earle Hawkins. I'm going to have to read that book too next, because I need to know about it.
Thank you. And my father was a true World War hero and a success in business with very little education. And my parents were very hardworking, and I'm very grateful to them. And although at times I think about, oh, I didn't have the childhood maybe someone else had, they taught me so much. They taught me so much.
We had a wonderful childhood. I worked all my childhood, and that was the best time of my life. I love it. I'm so happy that I did the same thing. I was working from the time I was a little kid.
You learn a lot about life at a young age, and it helps you grow up. It really does.
It really does. So the book is Supernatural Rescue, and it's by Linda Plunkett. And you can go to Amazon and get the Kindle version. And sometimes I don't know if they have the paperback version, but order whichever one. And it's really a book that you'll stop and you'll say, "Whoa, yeah, that's good. I'm glad I know this woman. I want to know this woman." And you go to her Facebook page and watch the video of her dancing. I think you're an inspiration.
Well, thank you so much. And I wanted to let people know, if for any reason they want the hard copy, to contact me personally, and I'll make sure that they get one.
Okay, and we're going to see Linda at some of the book signing events around town. We're going to organize some stuff for her, because she really needs to get out there and inspire people.
Thank you so much, Patsy.
You are delightful and just so beautiful, and it's just wonderful what you've done with this book.
Well, and I thank God. Without God, I would not be here. And sometimes I think about that. You know, I probably shouldn't be here, but there was a reason for me to live and to make it.
That's it.
And hopefully I can reach out and help others in this process.
Well, you've done a wonderful job. And I'm, again, thank you so much for coming in today. And
thank you.
I'll have you back when the next book comes out. And meanwhile, I want to tell everyone that Bill Larson was talking about online stuff. And I'm just telling you that if you go to my Facebook page, one, I'd like you to like me. I know all the Facebook collapsing. But the Facebook that's going to collapse is all of the bad stuff, hopefully. The real stuff, the business side, the where we're promoting books, we're promoting good stuff, I think that will stay. It's the bad side of Facebook. So I do need you to go and like my page. And while they're there, you can look at my shop before all these laws come in. And then I won't be able to afford it. It's crazy. But there are nice T-shirts and cups and all sorts of stuff that help support Joy on Paper. So I would appreciate if you have a look at that. And I would also very much like to tell you to please... you know, one of the things is think about the importance of really as right here when I see Linda, I think, wow, it's so wonderful if you just say something nice to somebody. So do that too today. But I wanted to remind you that if you are if you have an ebook that you have published yourself, you can enter it into the Writer's Digest contest. It's August 1st is the deadline. And so you might want to have a look at that. Go to Writer's Digest and look at the deadline for that and the requirements. But the prize is $8,000 this year. The prizes keep going up every year. They get bigger. And, of course, you get all sorts of notice from real agents and publishers in New York City, which is what you want. So that's why you have to go to Writer's Digest and look at their competition menu. And they have a couple of competitions. The EPUB book is August 1st. Short story is September 15th. So it's an opportunity for you to get noticed. And also, remember what I always tell you, if you are looking for an agent, you should go to Publishers Weekly and look at the deals. Because under the book deals, you'll find the agents who are active. And you want an agent who is active, who's actually getting deals, signing people up to contracts like this one that we were talking about with Bill Nelson. Emma Klein, who got a seven-figure deal for three books. The name of her book is The Girls. And as I said, I don't want one more girl book. I will tell you, ever since, I don't know who started it, but girl gone, girl this, girl that. I get so confused now. Girl with a tattoo, girl with this, girl with that. I don't know. I'm going to get girl who choked on her popcorn. That's the next one. I'm looking for girl who choked on her popcorn. Okay, I will read that one. That's the only girl. I really, please don't do a girl book. It drives you crazy because you don't know. I'm lining them up. You know, I couldn't believe it. I get this one and this one, this one. Girl, girl, girl. And, you know, for a long time, we didn't want to be called girls. But now they...
Now it's popular for whatever reason.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I thought, you know, we went through a period there where we said, don't call us a girl. Don't call us a girl. We're women. We're women, right? Didn't we go through that?
And now people think, well, I guess I must be younger if someone calls me a girl.
Yeah, so you get maybe it's senior moments that now we don't mind being called girl. Okay. But still, no more girl books. Let's call it gals or something. Anyway, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in audible book. So make sure you start writing and say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thanks, Ed, for everything. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. And just have an absolutely wonderful weekend and start writing. And what else? Just check out Linda Plunkett, and it will be on Facebook, right?
Yes.
And it's called Supernatural Rescue. Have a look at it and see her dancing to the stars. Wow. Really.
Thank you, Patsy.
Okay. Well, it's been fun to have you in the studio
today.
Thank
you. I've enjoyed being with you.
Okay. And we'll have you back. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.